And good morning. Welcome to the program today. This program is Health Essentials. My name is Roy Morgan. I am glad to be with you. The number here at the station is 903-589-8507. I realize there's been a change, but everybody here has done everything they can to try to make it as user-friendly as possible. I really know where I want to begin with today, so if you'll just indulge me for just a brief moment, let me just kind of give you some information, and hopefully you'll kind of let this roll around in your head and you'll think about it and you'll find out, does this apply to me? Is there anyone else that I know that could benefit from this information? And then maybe you can kind of pass it on. And I'm just going to try to make it sound very, very simple, but you know, there's a, well, how can I say this simply? I know y'all, the people that know me, I'm just going to suggest there's a tobacco or a vaping shop next door to my office. And in no way am I trying to be critical. But if I stood in front of the entrance to the shop and I asked everyone that's walking in, what is the reason that you're entering this shop? It always comes down to one thing. It's anxiety or depression. They're either hurting so bad on the inside emotionally, or they just don't like the way they feel on the inside and they can't take it anymore, so they want to feel something different. And sometimes that involves different substances that may either change the way they feel, modify the way they feel, give them just a brief moment where they might feel different. Well, but the bottom line is, they don't like the way they feel, and they've got to find a way to feel different. And sometimes they do feel better for just a moment. I mean, I watched a young woman the other day. She had like a 2-year-old daughter with her. They were in there for like 20 minutes. I know, because it was 7:45 when I got there. But I mean, what a way to teach a 2-year-old that going into a vape, having mama vape. Anyway, I'll get off that topic. I realize that's not going to be popular. But, I mean, the bottom line is, God has made us. We are created in His image. We're image bearers. Does that make sense? So we're born perfect, innocent, sinless. But it doesn't take long to go off the rails living in this world, doesn't it? There's a lot of bad influences. Anyway, so what I want to talk about briefly is, I came across this article, and I thought, okay, this may not be a cure-all, but to me it's very interesting. And sometimes when it comes to health, you're looking at, if I do these three things right here, will that give me a distinct advantage toward improving the way that I can function and the way that I feel? I mean, does anybody really want to go through the day with just severe brain fog? No. Do people want to function at their jobs or wherever they may be during the day with heightened states of anxiety and being in fight or flight? Well, the answer is no. Does somebody want to spend the entire day up in their head just overthinking everything? Well, the answer to that is no also. Does a person want to be so depressed that they're just paralyzed and they can't do anything different? And of course, you know this to be true. There was a time in their life that they could function at a high level. They could do everything they needed to do. They could actually hold down a job as opposed to not being able to have a job. They could actually provide for themselves. They could be responsible, productive members of society. They could pay taxes. Please, somebody help me. I can't be the only one that pays taxes. It's just too much. Somebody else is going to have to work also besides me and you. We can't just carry the load for endless amounts of people that, for a variety of reasons, they just, okay, their circumstances, according to them, they think they can't work. I get that. And the other reason why I'm saying that is, what is just about the number one reason now in the year 2024 for people hiring an attorney, going before a disability judge, and claiming they can no longer function, therefore they need government assistance or they need disability? Please pay my house note, pay for my car, pay for my groceries, give me food stamps, and give me money so I can just stay at home. Well, that's called anxiety. I think that's the number one reason why people claim, I can no longer function, Your Honor, therefore you pay me. So that's the way it is. So what I want to do is I want to give you some ideas on how to get unstuck, and I'm going to do it in the form of some of the research that I've come across. So, and please, you know, I'm not trying to overpromise anything to you. I'm just giving you details and clues about how can we get the body to work better. Please, you've got to see this as being helpful. Just ask yourself a question. How is it that I want to feel? Well, I already know the answer to that. I mean, if I'm talking to a reasonable human being in front of me, they usually say something like, I cannot take this anymore. I am so exhausted all day long. It is a battle. When I'm teaching class from like 1 o'clock to 3:30, I can just barely get through my lesson plan. It's just almost too much, Dr. Morgan. Well, I believe them when they say that. And when they say they get home from work, they're going, I have kids and a husband. I have no energy to invest in them. All I want to do is collapse on the couch. Well, we want to start to change that. So what can we do to help a person get better? Well, just listen to this right here. There is a B vitamin-like compound. It's called inositol. Let me spell it for you. I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L. Inositol. Anyway, this is a very short study, but it's interesting. It kind of caught my attention because I thought, what can we do? Well, this is something that you can do. Inositol is cheap. You can go get it anytime you want. It's available online if you live so far in the deep, dark, enchanted forest that you can't get out. Maybe a drone could deliver it to your cottage deep in the forest. I wonder if there is a house that's in the forest that's made of gingerbread with candy on the outside. I've read a story before about a little boy named Hans and a little girl named Gretel. They found a cottage in the woods deep in the forest, and there was candy everywhere. Isn't that interesting? According to a forgotten trial from the previous century, when I say the previous century, I'm talking about 1900 and I can't remember the year, maybe it's 88. A substantial daily dose of inositol can turn severe depression into mild depression in a matter of weeks. And of course, you can't look at the graphs that show the outcome of the study, but I'll try to explain it to you. All right, here it is right here. I missed the year by 6 years. It wasn't 1988. It was 1994. Joseph Levine, in 1994, he was then affiliated with the Yehuda Arabanel Mental Health Center in Israel. I'm sorry if I butchered that name. There's just a likelihood that I'm gonna. He published a small human study back in 1994, which he gave 13 participants with severe depression 12 grams of inositol every day for 4 weeks. That's really the only thing I want you to take away at this point. 4 weeks. People ask me all the time, how long is it going to take for this to work? What am I going to see? How long do you think it'll take before I get better? And those are all reasonable questions, aren't they? They want to have something that they can hope in or trust in, where they can go from where they are, which is in the valley of the shadow of death, mentally and emotionally, to where they want to be. They want to be on the top of a mountain. They want to have a mountaintop experience. Okay, so 4 weeks. In this publication, Levine did not specify which variant of inositol he used. So I don't know what to tell you on that. So I don't know the answer. But it was inositol. Usually like a white powder or white tablet. The good news is these things taste sweet. It's like giving candy to a baby. I haven't ever had a person take inositol and say, this is gross. Now, I've got plenty of other stuff that's super gross. It's like trying to get somebody to drink beet powder. I get so many complaints on that. Anyway, I'm getting off that topic. Okay, so what they did was the participants divided the 12 grams into two doses. That means they dissolved 6 grams of inositol, which is basically 2 teaspoons. if you want to know the truth of it, in a glass of fruit juice. Now, in the study, it doesn't say what the fruit juice is, but, you know, you've got an active imagination. Think apple. Maybe it was grapefruit. How about orange? What if it was diluted grape juice? What if it's pomegranate? I don't know, but it said fruit juice. So they took one glass in the morning, one glass in the evening. It didn't say how the people liked it, but I'm assuming it tasted pretty good. Okay, to start off with, the researcher by the name of Levine, he determined the severity of the participants' depression using what's called the Hamilton Depression Rating Scale, which is the standard. If you're going to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a clinician, a counselor, somebody that has a high level of training, then that's probably what they're going to go with. So the higher your score on the Hamilton Depression Rating Scale, the more serious the depression. So a score of 7 or less means you don't have any depression. You're like a normal functioning human being. You don't suffer from depression. If you've got a score somewhere between 7 and 17, that might indicate that you have mild depression. And you've already figured out they're using questionnaires, not blood tests. I like blood tests because they reveal where a person's out of balance quite often. Not always, but quite often. A score of 18 to 24 on that Hamilton Depression Scale, that's moderate depression. Scores of 25 or higher indicate severe depression. So, it's been years, but I'm almost positive. When that number hits 33, that's when a person starts thinking, I need to end my life. The other day on my lunch break, I listened to a video about Ravi Zacharias. And there's a lot about him I just did not know. And it was interesting on multiple levels. There were parts of the documentary that I absolutely did not like. But you know what? What difference does it make what I like and what I don't like? I think there were some good takeaways. But he tried to take his life when he was like 17 or 18, I think. And it was just horrible. And you know what? The thing of it is, it was all based on these expectations and the pressure to perform and not let the family down by doing great accomplishments or something like that. But anyway, I just felt bad for him. But he found hope through God or through Jesus. Anyway, enough of that. All right, here's the results right here. They took 12 grams of inositol. That was 6 grams in the morning, 6 later in the day. In the placebo group, now this is important also. I mean, you can even learn something from the placebo group. These were the people that were just given the fruit juice, but there's nothing in it, or nothing they thought was therapeutic that might help. And now, when I say depression, let me start over here and say this right here. The brain and the nervous system is not working right. It's not. Now, I know I'm going to be overly simplistic as I say this, but I still think it's correct. Do you know what the word inflammation means? Inflammation means that things aren't repairing. You're not in a good place. Cells and tissues and glands and organs like the brain, they're not working right because they're not happy. I remember Dr. Fivecoat telling me, he would say this to me. This is back in the 80s, by the way. That tells you how old I am. But Dr. Fivecoat would say, Roy, you got to remember, if your cells can make repairs as soon as they break down and keep your body in good repair, you won't have any symptoms at all. Do you get what Dr. Fivecoat just said? He said, if you feel great, that's because your body is able to repair what's broken. Okay? Bingo, that makes sense. You don't really have to be that smart. I need simple explanations like that all the time myself. But what do you have when a person is living in chronic inflammation? That means all their cells and tissues are just swimming in an ocean of inflammation. They're in disrepair. Basically, here's the bottom line. The brain cells are breaking down faster, and they're in disrepair faster than the ability of your body to repair them. That's called disease right there. Or if you want to say depression or anxiety, yes. Okay, does that make sense? So here's the results of the placebo group. These were the people that had severe depression. Their average score was 33. That means they're on the edge of suicide right there. They're, when they gave them a placebo, that means these people with depression, they felt like there might be something in the fruit juice that might help them. But their scores went from 33 to 29. Now, I know that's not great, but they went from really severe to maybe a little bit less severe just because they had this expectation that maybe something was going to help them. You know what that word's called? That's called hope. And if that's one thing that people need, is they need hope, but they also need hope based on something that's going to address what the problem is. And so all I'm suggesting to you is consider inositol as a way to feed and nourish a brain that is sick. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, this can't be that hard to understand. If your body, if your brain is suffering and you're having depression, can't we just take a step back and ask the question, is there anything that I'm lacking that if I just fed it to my brain, it actually might be able to work better? That's all I'm saying. How's that for a strategy? Something's not working right in your body. How about we try to feed and nourish it? I mean, what would you tell me if you didn't have enough oxygen to your toenails? You'd say, Dr. Morgan, I've got bad toenail fungus and toe infections. Well, I'm just going to say, why don't we start feeding your toenails a breakfast taco filled with oxygen? Or, let's get more oxygen. Okay, here we go. Here's the inositol group. You're probably asking yourself, what? Just get to the point, Dr. Morgan. What is the issue with severe depression and inositol? Okay, during the trial, and this lasted just for 4 weeks, the average score decreased from 33 to 22, which means it went from severe depression to moderate depression, almost mild. And what I'm doing is I'm looking at the chart and the graph right here. Now, they do have another category in here. It's called bipolar disorder. And I don't know that I'm going to really go into that, but bipolar, people can have these mania highs where they think, I've just invented an anti-gravity device, Dr. Morgan. I've had people tell me this. And Dr. Morgan, I've just invented a time machine. Oh, really? You have? Well, where is it located? Well, it's in my garage. Well, have you tried it? No, but I know it works. Well, how do you know it works? Anyway, stuff like that. Anyway, but even, I'm looking at these, there's one, two, three, four individuals that they were able to plot on a graph. Man, I'm telling you, to me, this is quite impressive, the results they got from giving people with bipolar inositol. Okay, here's a side effects right here. It said, oh, I'm sorry, they broke it down into men and to women, and so okay, now there were three women that had severe bipolar and there was one man, but all of them seemed to really get great results if they were bipolar from taking inositol. And if you don't know what inositol is, it's not a pharmaceutical drug. It's not a chemical that's made by a large pharmaceutical company that costs $600.85 a month or a week. It's not ultra expensive. It's a natural substance that our heavenly God and Father has made. So doesn't that give you some confidence that you might explore this as something that might help give you an advantage toward healing? Don't you want to be transformed and changed? Yes. Well, that means you have to do something different than what you're doing now. If you're only just sitting in your home all day long and staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning playing video games on your phone, well, that's probably not going to do much of anything except make you worse every single time. So, great results if you ask me. That comes from the American Journal of Psychiatry. It was published in 1995. I realize that study is almost 30 years old, but I don't care if it's 30 years old. The truth is the truth. It does say that some participants in the inositol group complained of nausea and flatulence. Now, folks, I know what nausea is. I've never heard of the term flatulence, so I'm not really sure if it's a serious side effect or not. I don't know. Maybe you're in a home with somebody that has flatulence. Maybe that's bad. Anyway, enough of that topic. All right. This program is Health Essential. Let me have one more go at this. And then if somebody wants to call. So I'm making an effort to help people that really need help. I am. But we've got to run toward what the problem is. If you want help, I'm here to help you. Let's get after it. Okay. I've read this one before, but I'm going to read it one more time because it seems that a lot of people don't remember it. And that's the way that I'm wired. I like repetition, meaning I like to read the same studies over and over again just to see if I can catch something new. That's like how you read the Bible anyway. You might read the same passage or the same chapter over and over again, trying to extract more deep meaning and information that can bless your lives and bless the others. Okay, this is researchers from Laristan University of Medical Sciences in Iran. Now, this was only done on women, so, you know, it's not men in the study, so you know that going into it. They divided 72 postmenopausal women into two groups. The women in the control group, they drank a cup of hot water every day. All right, you with that? What's in the water? It's called H2O. That's all there is. There was nothing added to it that might have a medicinal healing value for women that were in menopause. Now, the women in the experimental group, they drank a glass of tea made from, and you may want to write this down, 30 milligrams of saffron every day. Now, personally, that seems like a very, very small amount. Okay, the subjects made tea by soaking 30 milligrams of dried pistils of crocus sativus. That's a flower. You've seen crocus flowers. They're yellow usually. So they took 30 milligrams of dried pistils of crocus sativus flowers into boiling water for 10 to 15 minutes. Okay, that was the methodology they used. The researchers bought the dried pistils. When I say pistils, that's P-I-S-T-I-L-S, not O-L. It's not boiling a Glock in a cup of water. Anyway, here's the results right here. And you're probably wondering where I'm going with this, but just bear with me like one more minute and we'll get right to the punchline. It's all about happiness, okay? When the study began, subjects in both groups reported the same level of happiness, okay? The happiness scores did not change in the women drinking a cup of hot water every morning, but it sure increased in those that drank 30 milligrams of saffron. They have this right here. I'm looking at the graph, and I just love this graph right here. But they give them a test, and I don't really remember what the test was, but they're just trying to determine how happy is a person. And if you want to say, well, what's the counter to happiness? Well, you tell me. What's that look like? Is that called sadness? Is that called being down and blue or depressed or anxious? Probably all of that has a little bit of truth to it. But all they're doing is they're looking at women that drank hot water versus women that drank saffron tea. It was just 30 milligrams. I think I may say 30 milligrams about 25 million more times just so you get the idea. This ain't a big amount, folks. And the other reason why I'm saying that is maybe more might be better. That's been my experience when it comes to saffron. Okay. I'm looking at the graph right here. And this study was done. They start off at week zero. Then 2 weeks later, they measured them again. And then they did it again at 4 weeks. And then at 6 weeks. Well, I don't always see this in studies, but this is interesting to me because it shows from the starting point to the 6 weeks, it continues to go up like a person's walking up a staircase, and the numbers keep getting higher and higher the longer that you do it. And so even though this only lasted for 6 weeks, it showed specifically they all got better. And it didn't show any signs that they were plateauing. You know what it means to plateau? You're not really making any additional progress. But from the start to the 6 week mark, they just continually were getting better, which you already know what I'm going to say. What if they had done this for 4 months? Would it show that they were like super, super happy? Now, here's what I'm building toward. Let's just say that you've got a family member and they just do not make great decisions. And their attitude is to be desired. And maybe they have some things that they participate in that's just not, that's very destructive. It's not in their best interest. Maybe they're engaged in a lifestyle that's just very, very harmful. And I know where we're coming from. We want what's best for the person. You don't want a person to self-destruct. But one thing that usually works, I've done this for a while now, and so this is really a brilliant statement about to make. But if a person starts to feel emotionally better and their mind becomes more clear, and they can look at me and say, Dr. Morgan, by the way, I like the way that I think now. I didn't so much a month ago, but now me likey. And my emotions, I'm on a more even keel. And I have more mental clarity. I can think so much better. That's just been a game changer, because like if I read a book, I can actually understand it now. And I actually have a desire to start to study so I can grow and improve myself. And I feel like a stronger desire to want to participate in life. Before, I didn't even like being around other people. Everybody just irritated me. But now, I like being around people, and they're actually my friends. I want to be sweet to them instead of being, you know, there's some people that are so argumentative. But what if all the inflammation left your brain? And all of a sudden, you went from argumentative and negative, you actually went to very positive. And you had, and you developed the capacity to start seeing things from a very positive point of view. I mean, am I saying anything that sounds far out to you? But you've got to have a healthy nervous system and a healthy brain. So, according to the basic research, the main active substances in saffron is, and I'm going to call it a chemical, I shouldn't do that, I should call it a phenol or flavonoid. That gives you the idea that it's a substance. It's just naturally occurring in the flower. Okay, they call them crocin. They say it's the naked version of crocetin. I'd have to look that up. You could ask me all sorts of questions about crocetin. I'd say it's found in a crocus flower. It's found in saffron, and the other compound is called saffronol. But these are things that when you consume them, you get the benefit because it seems to have this remarkable ability to target inflammation around your brain cells. I don't care who you are right now. If you're not listening to what I'm saying, that's your choice. But if you're willing to say, what can I do to feed and nourish my brain, then maybe we're in business. Now, obviously, you know, I'm not trying to present all this information as a panacea. I don't think I'm one to overpromise anything to anybody. I don't give false hope. But if I know something can be a lot better, I'll give them hope and I'll say, listen, you should be in a much better place 10 days from now if you'll do these things. Just give it 10 days. I think I had a woman the other day, I said, you're going to have to give this 6 weeks. And that's also based on my experience. I mean, I don't really have to be that genius of an individual to figure out, ma'am, how long did it take to get, you know, out of the severe depression? Well, it took 6 weeks. Okay. So there's maybe how I arrived at that conclusion. All right, one more thing, and then we'll go to the phone lines. And if you do not want to call, I'm going to hammer you with more information. No, it's always fun taking phone calls. I didn't copy this article off right here. But listen, just listen to the abstract. Is the antidepressant effect of physical exercise superior to that of pharmacological antidepressants? That's the trial, okay? And I'm looking at the graph in front of me. Now, you tell me, what works better? Abilify, Geodon, Zoloft, Paxil, Seroquel. Did I mention Abilify yet? No, what works better? Daily physical exercise or taking drugs? Which one works better? Well, it looks to me like, by studying the graph, it's a runaway blowout win for exercise. How about that? How about this high technology of just moving your body? Last time I checked, oxygen is pretty critical to mission function of the body. And yes, you can sit down all day long and you can play on your cell phone, but I'm going to recommend you throw your cell phone in the trash and get rid of it. If you need to talk to somebody, get on your bicycle, drive over to their house, pedal over there, and have a real conversation. If you need to go to the grocery store, ditch your cell phone and quit having them deliver it to you if you're capable of going. Anyway, if you'd like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line once again open, area code 903-589-8507. 903-589-8507. So if you want to call me and ask a question, now's a good time to do that. Now, I went to my office this morning because I had to grab something real quick. It's actually some beet juice. I'm sure nobody else is going to like that, but I do. But I always get so many phone calls after 5:30, and it's always the same thing. Dr. Morgan, are you still there? I really have something really important to talk to you about. And this happens just about every single Friday. And I don't know why it is, but people really like to wait till the very last second. Okay, now I've got it turned on. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I was wondering if you had any supplemental ideas for local allergy sufferers.
Yes, it's called raw honey.
Okay.
So if you get some raw local honey that's super dirty and you can't see through it, that means they haven't made an attempt to filter it or to cook it or purify it. That's one thing that can be a difference. The other thing that can be like a major home run is just consuming bee pollen.
Bee pollen.
Mm-hmm. So they sell
it. Where do I get that?
Well, the health food store would be one location. If you go to somebody, do you know anybody in your area that sells raw honey?
Not off the top of my head, but probably the farmer's market.
Well, ask them when you go there, what do they do with the bee pollen?
Oh, okay.
So there is a farmer's market where you live?
Yes.
Well, that's kind of encouraging. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, fresh is good.
You ain't kidding. So bee pollen, that can transform you to where your body develops tolerance to allergies.
Okay.
Even
during like when allergy season is kind of over, mm-hmm. and they're not suffering anymore, do you continue with that to keep it, you know, like at the right level, or is that like an everyday 365 kind of thing? Or
ma'am, I like the way you think. I really like the way you think, because what you're saying is, hey, Dr. Morgan, is there something that I could do to try to, like, even avert all this junk from happening to me if I just take care of myself before allergy season gets here? I like the way
Absolutely.
You think. That's smart.
Yeah.
And so let me give you a couple ideas. Do you know what cod liver oil is?
Yes.
Okay, this is probably more experiential on my end, but I find when people consistently take cod liver oil, they usually have the least problems of all times when it comes to allergies.
Okay.
And maybe it has something to do with stabilizing all the cell membranes to where they can work properly. So that's one thing that you could do right there. Now, the other direction where my mind goes, there is a plant that grows so available around here. It's called bull nettle or stinging nettle. I am pretty sure you know what that looks like, and I'm pretty sure you know what that feels like, because surely you brushed up against one of them, right?
Oh, yeah.
Feels like a jellyfish wrapping its tentacles around your leg. It's pretty bad.
Yes, it does.
But that's one of the oldest remedies of all time to help stop allergies in their tracks. So you could even get stinging nettle tea. Sometimes it's called nettle tea, like N-E-T-T-L-E. That's one thing
right
there.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
Okay. So that's an option. Okay. Now, I am not making a joke by what I'm fixing to say, all right?
Okay.
So it's not to try to be humorous, but I'm telling you, when I really like reading about old-time remedies. I really do. It's so intriguing and fascinating. But if this was the year 1901, you know, that was a little after I was born, I think. Yeah, but if it was 1901 and somebody had the absolute most severe allergy attack, I know what the doctors would do back then. They would recommend or administer a coffee retention enema. Because
really?
The coffee, yeah, oh, you betcha. They used to call it coffee dialysis. That's kind of a play on words, but look at what people do when their kidneys fail. They go to renal dialysis. But a coffee retention enema where you take coffee, obviously you're trying to let it cool down to body temperature. Now, I am going to make a joke right now, okay?
Okay.
When I was in college, there was a young man that sat directly right in front of me. His name was Bruce Guillory. He was right in front of me. And I remember the instructor or the professor was talking about how to clear severe allergies from the human body. And he was talking about a coffee retention enema, and Bruce's hand went up. So I thought, man, this is going to be just a super intelligent question. I can't wait to hear what Bruce says. And so the instructor said, yes, Mr. Guillory. And Bruce said this. He said, should we wait for the coffee to cool down first before we apply it? And I'm going, and you know what? That really was funny. The whole class just burst into laughter. I have a lot of stories like that. I should start telling stories about Ho, who was from Vietnam, that sat right in front of me also. Ho was an endless source of entertainment to me. Wait, what are we talking about? Allergies?
Yeah.
But a coffee retention enema.
Okay.
You look it up for yourself, but it's absolutely, you let it cool down to body temperature. 212 degrees might actually do more harm than good.
Obviously.
Hey, but if it was 212, all the evil spirits in your body would leave. Instantly.
Yeah.
Burn them.
And maybe your internal organs as well.
Ma'am, you didn't have to bring up that aspect of it. That's just a slightly negative side effect of doing it at 212 degrees. So a coffee retention enema is one of the greatest techniques of all to help purge your body of all the toxic waste and debris in there.
Okay.
I personally think that if somebody has had, and this is not meant to be negative, somebody has had endless amounts of chemo and radiation and all these toxic treatments for cancer, mm-hmm. I never see them work out unless they do coffee enemas. So even if the chemotherapy is able to target the killing of cancers and tumors, what are you going to do with all the debris feel from the broken down cancer cells? Well, you got to clear it out. And so the coffee.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Now, I don't mind if you experiment with different temperature levels on your husband. No, that's a joke. That's a joke.
Well, this is for him, but we won't tell him that.
You know, if the steam is rolling off of it, he might say, is that just a little bit too hot there?
He might just.
Oh,
is
no.
Is there any dosage on the bee pollen if I find it in capsule form?
Yeah, just take it. Just take like about a spoonful. No, don't get it in tablet form ever. Just get it the loose granules.
Okay.
Usually the lowest possible quality and the oldest, you know, weakened pollen, they're going to convert that into capsules.
Okay.
See, I know all these little tricks of the food industry. They try to put the trashy pollen that's like past its lifespan of being productive into capsule forms, and they want to sell it at full price.
Right.
I know that's going to be very hard for you to believe that people would try to make a buck on inferior, weakened products, but it happens every single day.
Oh, wow. That's what our market is based upon, actually. So I'm assuming then that the cod liver oil also should be not in capsule form. It should be in liquid.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. That's the reverse. That's a different. If you get high quality cod liver oil, it'll be in a gelatin capsule because what they'll do is.
Okay.
Now, this is just my preference. I think there's an essential oil known as lemon oil.
Yeah.
You've heard of lemon oil, haven't you?
Absolutely.
They just distill, you know, the peels of lemon, and they get these oils that are extracted from the peel, and that's the essential oil of lemon right there. But it's a very, very good preservative, meaning it keeps it from turning rancid or oxidizing or going bad. So if they get those gelatin, you know, big honking pearls, I took three of them myself this morning. They usually put lemon oil in there. So if I bite down into one of them, cod liver oil, I can taste the lemon oil. It never tastes bad. I have never burped or belched or had. I was just reading about a new word that's not in my vocabulary. It's called flatulence. But I haven't studied enough to speak with it about the topic on authority. But I don't think I've ever had that from taking good, high-quality cod liver oil.
Oh, but really? That's one of the byproducts that I have heard. I mean,
yeah, because you're taking, because, but the reason is because it's rancid. If you get low quality, it's rancid.
Okay.
And that's another thing the industry does. The one that I take comes from Standard Process, but they've proven to me that it's like very pure. It's very clean. There's no heavy metals in it. I think it comes from the Southern Arctic Ocean. I know there's a lot of people out there listening that believe the Earth is flat, but I think there's a chance it might be round.
Yeah.
And down at the Southern Pole is a place called Antarctica. And so the oceans down there are probably, I mean, that's the most nutrient-dense ocean that I've read about. And so when the cod live there, they tend to have higher nutrient density. That's just, now, I know that most people love to go catch cod in Lake Palestine, but they're just not as nutrient-dense.
Well, it's warmer water. Cold water has more nutrients.
And I know they like to fish for sailfish, marlin, and great white sharks in Lake Palestine, too. I've just never caught one.
Okay, so I need loose bee pollen, and I need gel caps.
Yeah, raw honey, cod liver oil. Yeah, there you go. And then,
even the coffee retention oil.
Yeah, and the other thing, you can find capsules right now of stinging nettle.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just a common herb. It should be one of the more less expensive ones, or you can actually make your own. Just have your husband put a blindfold on him and have him crawl on all fours and just feel around for him. No, I'm joking. Don't do that.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work out.
I think that would light him up pretty quick, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so if
he's the one with the allergies.
All right, well, you got plenty of stuff to work on, but you could easily give him stinging nettle to see if that helps his body develop tolerance where he doesn't react to it.
Okay.
All right. Hope that helps.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, there's a phone line officially open. It's 903-589-8507. I'm getting phone calls, but they're on the wrong number. Well, yours is the right number. Way to go.
All right.
Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
A couple of weeks ago, you were talking with a lady about Barrett's esophagus and treating that with vinegar. Could you expound on that just a little bit?
I don't remember exactly what I said, but let me take one step back and lay some ground rules first, okay? All right, so, and I'll get to the vinegar in just a split second. I'll get to that number two, but number one, you got to be open to the idea that maybe something in our food supply has changed over the last 6,000 years. And one of the things that's changed is we have a bunch of chemical Roundup in the wheat now. They've genetically modified it, which they've altered it in the laboratory. It's been hybridized. They put a boatload of fertilizer. Anyway, all I'm trying to say is maybe wheat is a different critter than what it used to be when Abraham was eating bread. Does that sound reasonable?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes. So, personally, I see the highest correlation to Barrett's esophagitis with people that eat wheat. So, what do you think I'm going to tell you? Don't eat wheat if you want Barrett's
esophagitis. I came to see you back around May of last year.
Okay.
And we did some food allergy testing, and you said I had a severe reaction to wheat, and your words were avoid it like the plague for 90 days or so, and let's see what happens, and things cleared up.
Oh, good. And well, hey, will you illustrate my point then?
Since May, I've not had but just a bite or two here and there unintentionally.
Well, let's try to answer your question then. So, way to go. So, the answer to your question is this. You say, what does vinegar have to do with it? Okay, so you know that when you swallow, can I just make up something here?
Yeah.
Let's just say you have super delicious chicken salad in front of you, and it's made of, how are we going to make it? We're going to use chicken, we're going to use celery, we're going to have onions in there. If you tell me you like apples cut up in it, hey, I'm game with that, okay? So if you take a bite of that, you're going to chew that up in your mouth, and then you're going to attempt to swallow it in small, swallowable, you know, pieces, but it's got to be able to go down the esophagus into the stomach. And so if you told me, how long does it take if I drink water, Dr. Morgan, for it to get into my stomach? Well, usually about 1 to 2 seconds. I know that sounds like a little bit of a delay, but when they've timed it with radioactive water and they've looked at it under a video fluoroscopy, it's about 1 to 2 seconds. So every time you take a drink, it's like 1001, 1002, and bingo, it's in your stomach. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so if you chew up chicken salad and it's got apples and celery in it and it's crunchy, which that's what you want, the more that you crush and chew and grind, that's where every bit of your body's better. Just like they've done studies on people that only eat soft foods, highest level of dementia and Alzheimer's. Don't do that. There's something about chewing that's good for the brain too. So if you chew up the chicken salad, it takes 10 to 11 seconds for that to make it from your mouth down the esophagus into the stomach. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah.
You have a ring-like muscle. It's called the cardiac sphincter. It's right there at the hiatus of the diaphragm. That's an opening in the diaphragm, so when you swallow food, it goes down the esophagus in the stomach, but that sphincter has got to open up, and then it has to close behind it. Kind of like an anal sphincter. A little bitty baby poops, and then the anal sphincter closes. That's just God's design. It's the way it is. So I'm going to use the word tone, T-O-N-E. You've got to have a certain amount of tone of that cardiac sphincter. But as a human being ages, we start to lose that tone, or we start to lose the strength. I know that's a shock to people that they lose strength when they get older. Do you know any 80 or 85-year-old men that are as strong as they were when they were 16? I don't think so. It just doesn't happen.
No.
So that's all based on the amount of having sufficient amounts of acid in your stomach. And so enter the topic of apple cider vinegar. So as a simple experiment, you could try maybe 2 teaspoons, in severe cases, maybe 1 tablespoon, diluted in water or tea or something like that. But if you drink that before a meal, then the net of positive effect is that cardiac sphincter is able to open and close back off more efficiently than what it did before. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's an experiment. So you're trying to improve the tone of your digestive system, called your esophagus, cardiac sphincter, and stomach, and we want to see if that works better. So it's possible that if a person's suffering from reflux or acid indigestion or heartburn, or maybe they just the food sits in the stomach too long, it may be that all you need is just a little bit of apple cider vinegar to help it to regain the ability to work right.
Okay, so is this short-term or long-term? Or
I have no idea. I don't know anything about you. You got to put it to the test.
No, I mean the keep doing the vinegar. Do you
well,
keep doing
that? Okay, well, what's your response? How do I know what your response is until you do it?
Yeah, okay.
I'm really trying to make it simple. I know what you want me to say, but I'm going to say this. You're going to have a little bit of faith, and you're going to have to do it, and you're going to put it to the test, and you're going to find out, and you're going to tell me. And that's where a physician really needs a person to tell them, what is your experience? How did this work out for you? Are you super happy? And if you call back and say, you're not going to believe this, Dr. Morgan, 6 weeks later, I have completely fixed my problem, all but with apple cider vinegar, then I know the answer to your question. You answered it for me. So, I don't know until you're willing to do it.
A 6 week change would be incredible. I've been taking omeprazole for, goodness, probably 15, 16 years.
Yeah, and see, that's the other problem right there. Your stomach is wrecked because of the omeprazole. I'm not blaming you, but the doctor did not give you full disclosure and say, hey, I got a drug I want to give you here. I'm going to completely cause you to become depleted in all your minerals. I'm going to make you physically weaker. Your muscles are going to develop sarcopenia, which means they waste away in nothingness. You're probably going to have a much higher risk of developing cancer down the road. You're not even going to be able to digest your food. Doesn't this sound like a great plan? Isn't this a good plan? But if you've done it for 15 years, I mean, that's a long-term deal. And so you just added one new, you just unfolded one new detail to me that I did not know. You may not believe this. I don't have a photographic memory. If you say I saw you in May last year, okay. Have I seen you since?
No.
Okay, so how do I know what's happening? I haven't had a follow-up visit where I can see if we need to change or adjust something.
Yeah.
So until you put it to the test, how do I know what's going to happen? But you're asking a reasonable question, so I'm giving you a course of action so you can put it to the test and find out how well you do.
Okay. Okay. Fantastic.
Well, I mean, is that fair enough?
Yes. Yep.
So if you let's turn all this around. I'm joking as I say this. Why don't you ask your doctor about what's his plan to get you off Prilosec?
Yeah, well,
but when you ask your doctor how long it's going to take to get your stomach back in good shape, what does he tell you?
I haven't even bothered to ask.
Oh, but you're asking me that question, aren't you?
Because all he knows to do is to give me more medicine.
Did you give him a chance?
Well, I've changed doctors. I've moved to a different state, but...
Okay, but anyway, you understand the point. Yes. You're not really asking your doctor because there's a presupposition that just maybe they're going to only spend about, 5 minutes with you, and 4.5 is on the computer typing in their notes.
Right.
Really not enough time to examine you, is it?
Right.
Okay, well, you got something good to work with here. I'm totally rooting for you, buddy.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Have a good day. Okay, there's a phone line open. If you want to call and make a comment, 903-589-8507. Good morning. How are you today? Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for your phone call.
Yes, sir. I have a question. I have early stages fatty liver disease. Help me with that, please.
Well, this week in the mail, I got the nicest card from a woman in Connecticut. Can I just read it to you real quick?
Yes, sir.
I mean, I don't have it. It's in my office. But she said, Dr. Morgan, I've had a fatty liver for 20 years, and they just tested me. Now it's completely gone. I'm healed. I'm going, yes, way to go. You did it. And then the week before, a woman called me. She said, Dr. Morgan, you're not going to believe this. I've had a fatty liver for 35 years, and now it's completely gone and healed. Anyway, so you know why I'm telling you that. I'm telling that to give you hope because it's doable.
Yes,
and
sir.
So I'm going to try to make this sound simple in the time that I have, all right?
Yes, sir.
There is a hormone in your body that tells your body to store as much fat as possible in the liver. Do you know what it's called?
No.
It's called insulin.
Oh, okay.
And so if a person has low levels of insulin, it's impossible to have a fatty liver. But if a person has high levels, if the circumstances are right for insulin to be high, they're going to have a fatty liver.
Okay.
And so if I look at the studies on what happens to people when they have a chronic fatty liver, it ain't rocket science, but things don't go well when it comes to a person's health. You don't want a fatty liver, and that's why you're calling. So if you could just prayerfully, thoughtfully consider the following information as maybe a plan to reverse this, and I think that would be a good starting point. So, number one, I've got to compel you not to eat grains. And grains are going to be things like wheat and corn and rice and heavy starches like maybe potatoes for some people. I'm only saying that because some people eat potatoes for breakfast, lunch, and supper, and it's just too much starch.
Yes, sir.
And so if you focus more on meat and vegetables, and if you want something sweet, it's called a bowl of strawberries or cherries or blackberries, something like that.
Yeah.
Now, does that sound reasonable?
It does. It does, because I've been eating a lot of grains and potatoes all my life.
If you could momentarily just focus more on getting meat and protein, then what we can have is we're changing the dynamics of your liver where it can heal.
Okay.
Another technique is called intermittent fasting. If you skip breakfast, then your liver's going to say, oh, my goodness, she's not going to give us anything to eat for breakfast. We want our donuts right now. But if you don't do that, your liver will start eating the fat to get rid of it. So if you don't eat breakfast, your body will eat you. I mean that in a good way.
Yes, I understand that. Yes.
I don't mean that cannibals are going to run out of the forest and eat you and barbecue you. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about your cells converting your fat into energy. Okay. Got to make sure that nobody misunderstands what I'm saying.
I get it.
Okay. And so that would be very good right there. Now, the other things that I like, you remember the guy called about the vinegar?
Yes.
Vinegar is one of the greatest solvents of all time. I think lemon juice is also, and I think water is. But if you start taking a little bit of vinegar water, that helps break down and dissolve the fat in the liver. Gently.
What about, yeah.
What'd you say?
What about lemon water?
Oh, I think it's great. Water. I think you're a pure genius for saying that. Lemon water is excellent. Anytime that you want to heal the liver, squeeze some lemon juice into water and drink it. That's brilliant.
Okay.
When is the last time somebody's called you brilliant? Was it 3 seconds ago?
A few seconds ago.
I kind of knew what you were going to say. But anyway, I think that's funny. But if you will, yes, lemon water. So if you cooked a salmon fillet, squeeze all the lemon juice you want on it. If you have asparagus on your plate or Brussels sprouts, squeeze lemon juice on it. If you're making herbal tea like dandelion root tea, which is perfect for the liver, or hibiscus, squeeze lemon juice into it, or maybe put it like a spoonful of vinegar. But you're trying
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. Go ahead, man.
Okay, so I have a hard time with meat. I really don't like it. So what's protein-wise? I'm gonna try some turkey.
That's what I'm going to have to talk you into. So it's either going to be something that you can do. Now, historically, I can tell you what's easiest. It's fish. Do you like fish?
I can do that, yes.
Okay, do you like eggs?
Yes.
How about turkey and chicken? Do you like those?
I can do it.
What does that mean, though? Now, are you telling me that it's heavy on your stomach?
No, I'm just saying that for some reason I've just never liked the texture of meat.
Oh, okay. I totally respect that. So
yeah. So I just actually when I did eat meat, it has been turkey or chicken. But if I have a plate full of anything else, I'll eat it before I'll eat my meat, and I might not end up eating my meat.
I'm with you on that. So we've got some imbalances. It's just going to take time to correct. But I would say you might see some benefit from just a little apple cider vinegar before you eat a meal. And I think you're going to see a benefit from lemon. So we got to have a starting point. If that tells me you've got two bites of chicken on your plate and here's what you do. You take a sheet of paper, you write down your goal for the day, and your goal is to eat two bites of chicken. Why don't we just knock that goal out and scratch it off your list? I won. I did it. Yay.
Right.
But you got to have some way to turn this around, but we need to start getting protein.
Okay.
And I need you just to remember also, your liver is made of protein. If you give it what it needs, then you can turn this around. Now, there is an amino acid, and I realize I have like next to no time available, but there's an amino acid called taurine. T-A-U-R-I-N-E.
Okay.
In simplicity, that is one of the greatest, most positive remedies for a fatty liver that you might be able to consider prayerfully. And that's protein, though. But that may be a game changer because you might be able to swallow it. And you can certainly be like anybody else. You can just experiment with the amount of it to find out what works best for you. But if you're moving in the right direction, your body's going to say, oh, my goodness. She is trying to help us get well. I can't believe it.
I can't believe she didn't eat that.
All those mashed potatoes. She ate two bites of chicken. This is amazing.
Right.
Okay,
yeah,
so.
My aunt had fatty liver disease, and she didn't take care of it. So now she was just diagnosed with, I'm trying to think of what it turned into. Something really bad.
How about cirrhosis? Cirrhosis, yes.
Cirrhosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have to drink a boatload of moonshine every day to cause cirrhosis. You can just eat potatoes.
Yeah.
So, okay. Unfortunately, we're completely out of time, but I've thoroughly enjoyed visiting with you, and I hope this has helped.
Oh, it has. Thank you so, so much.
You're welcome.
I will give you a follow-up, too.
You have a great day, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye.